Today is Thursday, November 14th, and this is the World Socialist Website. As Trump assembles dictatorial regime, Biden offers smoothest transition. By Patrick Martin. As President-elect Donald Trump assembles, with extreme rapidity, a cabinet of fascists and loyalists, President Joe Biden welcomed the aspiring dictator to the White House Wednesday and promised his full cooperation in the transition to the new government. In a staggering statement, Biden offered to do, quote, everything we can to make sure you're accommodated, have what you need, unquote. Trump responded, quote, I appreciate very much a transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as you can get, unquote. Biden called Trump Donald, and Trump called him Joe. Only a month ago, Biden acknowledged Trump was a fascist. In his speech at the Democratic National Convention in August, Biden warned that Trump would be, quote, a dictator on day one, unquote. Now he opened the White House to his successor, initiated a handshake for the press photographers to capture, and congratulated Trump on his electoral success. If further proof was needed of the cowardice, duplicity, and political bankruptcy of the Democratic Party, this was it. Biden remains president for two more months. There are innumerable actions he could take to undermine the actions of a Trump presidency, which is preparing a massive assault on millions of immigrants and the democratic rights of the population. Instead, the Democrats are pledging their cooperation. The public photo op was followed by a closed-door two-hour meeting at which Biden and Trump primarily discussed foreign policy, according to subsequent press accounts, including the U.S.-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, the U.S.-backed Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, and wider war moves in the Middle East focused on Iran. After the meeting, Trump confirmed the discussions on Ukraine and the Middle East. It is likely that the two presidents also discuss the U.S. war buildup against China, where Biden has focused on the strengthening of U.S. military ties with Japan, South Korea, Australia, and India, its principal allies in the region, while continuing to shift U.S. military assets to the Pacific. Trump's initial nominations for national security positions have been a slew of anti-China hawks, including Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, Representative Michael Waltz for National Security Advisor, Representative Elise Stefanik for UN Ambassador, and Fox News pundit Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense. The Hegseth appointment is particularly remarkable, since the former Iraq and Afghanistan combat veteran was only a major in the Army Reserves and has spent the last decade as a host on the weekend Fox and Friends program. The nomination came as the Wall Street Journal reported that Trump is considering a draft executive order to establish a quote-unquote warrior board of retired senior military commanders, quote, with the power to review 3- and 4-star officers and to recommend removals of any deemed unfit for leadership, unquote. In effect, this would be an instrument to purge the military of officers deemed insufficiently loyal to Trump, who might repeat the objections of General Mark Milley and other top officers to Trump's demands in 2020 to deploy the army on the streets against the American people. Even as the Trump-Biden meeting at the White House was going on, the Trump Transition Office announced his most provocative nomination yet, the selection of Republican Representative Matt Gaetz to become U.S. Attorney General, the top law enforcement official in the federal government. The 42-year-old Florida congressman is a close associate of the fascist Steve Bannon and one of the most fervent supporters of Trump in the House Republican caucus. On Tuesday, in advance of the Gaetz nomination, Bannon declared in relation to the Justice Department, quote, the hunted are about to become the hunters. Gaetz is one of the House Republicans most closely identified with the violent assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. When a mob summoned by Trump sought to block the congressional certification of his defeat by Biden in the 2020 election. Gaetz helped charter buses to Washington for the rally addressed by Trump. He has been vocal in defending the fascist thugs who attack the Capitol and in advocating Trump pardon them as soon as he takes office. If he assumes control of the Department of Justice, Gates would become the point man in a campaign to prosecute a wide range of Trump's political targets. This would include not only prominent Democrats like Biden, former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Vice President Kamala Harris, but also students protesting the Gaza genocide, socialists, and all those who seek to oppose Trump's threatened onslaught against immigrants and the democratic rights of the working class. The nomination of Gates coincided with other developments cementing the control of official Washington by Trump and his fascist cohorts. Most corporate media outlets announced Wednesday that the Republican Party would maintain its control of the House of Representatives after contested races in Arizona and California were declared for the Republican incumbents. This means that Trump and the Republicans will control the White House, the Senate, the House of Representatives, and the Supreme Court, where a 6-3 ultra-right majority ruled last summer that Trump has absolute immunity for any action he takes as president, no matter how illegal, unconstitutional, or corrupt. Trump is seeking a further expansion of his authority by demanding that the newly elected Senate Majority Leader, John Thune of South Dakota, agree to unlimited adjournments at the president's request, during which time Trump would be able to fill cabinet posts with recess appointments that would not have to clear a vote in the Senate. This would violate the constitutional requirement that the upper house give its advice and consent for nominations to high-level executive and judicial posts, effectively giving Trump the ability to rule by decree. Aides are also discussing ways to give Trump the ability to impose massive social cuts proposed by Elon Musk as part of the Department of Government Efficiency, without any congressional approval. While Trump's drive to amass executive power in his hands is unprecedented, the posture of Biden and the Democrats is equally staggering. Whether it is senility in the case of the president or cowardice and duplicity for his congressional counterparts, the Democrats refuse to lift a finger to oppose the fascist takeover of the government. As for the left wing of the Democratic Party, Senator Bernie Sanders has said nothing about Trump's initial appointments and the Trump-Biden love fest at the White House. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has begun a listening tour to speak to Bronx constituents who voted for her and Trump on November 5th. The abject collaboration of the Democrats conforms to a historical pattern extending now for over a quarter century. Step by step, as American democracy has crumbled and the Republican Party has come forward as the instrument of the most ruthless and anti-democratic sections of the ruling class, the Democratic Party has blocked any effort to fight back. When the U.S. Supreme Court intervened for the first time to sanction the theft of the 2000 presidential election, Democrat Al Gore bowed down to the decision to shut down vote counting in Florida. When Democrats regained control of Congress in 2006, it was newly elected House Speaker Nancy Pelosi who blocked any effort to impeach George W. Bush for his illegal war in Iraq or his establishment of secret CIA torture prisons. When Barack Obama was elected president in 2008, he blocked any prosecution of the torturers, continued Bush's illegal wars, and expanded the death-dealing powers of the presidency by authorizing drone missile assassinations around the world, including of American citizens. When Trump first won election to the presidency in 2016, Obama welcomed him to the White House and declared the election an intramural scrimmage between two sides on the same team. Trump, of course, took no such approach when he lost the 2020 election by 7 million votes, instead seeking to overturn the result through a violent coup. Now Biden has repeated Obama's welcome to Trump, under conditions in which virtually every leading Democrat has acknowledged that Trump's intentions are to establish an authoritarian dictatorship. This record of spineless capitulation and outright collaboration demonstrates, as the World Socialist website has consistently warned, that there is no constituency for the defense of democracy within the American ruling elite. All the political representatives of the super rich accept that they must engage in violent repression to suppress the mounting social conflicts within the United States and prevent any challenge from the working class to a social system entirely dominated by a capitalist oligarchy. Israel bombs Beirut and Lebanon-Syria border as UN declares basic foodstuffs barely exist in Gaza, by Jordan Shilton. Israel carried out 4 major airstrikes on the southern suburbs of the Lebanese capital Beirut yesterday, as well as a series of strikes on bridges and other infrastructure on the Lebanon-Syria border, coming as the Zionist regime continues to starve Gaza and the U.S. military once again struck targets in Yemen. The attacks show that there is no let-up and the drive by Washington's attack dog to redraw the map of the Middle East. The 4 strikes targeted the suburbs of Haret Harik and Burj al Barajna. The strikes flattened 6 residential buildings, but no official casualty figures were initially reported. After at least 78 people were killed in Israel Defense Forces, or IDF, raids on Tuesday, the official death toll in Lebanon since October 8th stands at 3,365, with well over 14,000 wounded. Defense Minister Israel Katz, who replaced Yoav Gallant after his firing by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last week, vowed to continue to escalate the conflict in Lebanon. In a visit to the IDF's Northern Command, Katz declared, quote, "We will not make any ceasefire, we will not take our foot off the gas, and we will not allow any arrangement that does not include the achievement of the war's goals," unquote. These include the disarming of Hezbollah, the pushing of its forces north of the Litani River, and the return of residents to towns and villages on Israel's northern border, he added. The defense minister asserted that Israel would retain, quote, "the right to enforce," unquote, any ceasefire deal. That is, the right to launch attacks inside Lebanon at will after a ceasefire is concluded. On the ground, the IDF reported 6 casualties following a gun battle with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. The clash reportedly occurred as Israeli forces sought to advance to the second line of villages inside the border. Syrian state news agency Sana reported that the airstrikes near the border caused significant damage to infrastructure. According to the IDF, the attacks were aimed at smuggling routes used by Iran to transfer weaponry to Hezbollah. They come less than 3 weeks after Israel's airstrikes on Iran on October 26, which targeted military sites and were described by the World Socialist website as a dress rehearsal for a region-wide war. U.S. Central Command also announced Wednesday that it struck numerous sites in Yemen on Saturday and Sunday, reportedly destroying weapons supplied to the Houthis by Iran. American imperialism has backed Israel's genocide against the Palestinians and subsequent war on Lebanon to the hilt, seeing them as components of its preparations for a region-wide war targeting Iran. Washington is pursuing the goal of consolidating its hegemony over the oil-rich region as part of a renewed redivision of the world, which encompasses the war on Russia and Ukraine and advanced preparations for war with China in the Asia-Pacific. If Katz's pledge to intensify the war in Lebanon is fulfilled, the likelihood that the conflict will spread throughout the energy-rich region will become even greater. President-elect Donald Trump, who drastically escalated tensions with Tehran during his first term in office by abrogating the nuclear accord with Iran, has nominated Marco Rubio, a vocal anti-Iran hawk, as his Secretary of State. At a campaign rally last month, Trump urged Israel to strike Iran's nuclear sites at a time when the bourgeois clerical regime in Tehran was warning that such a decision would lead to all-out war. In the end, Netanyahu chose the more limited but nonetheless provocative attack on October 26 that struck military sites. Mike Huckabee, a staunch defender of the Zionist state's expansionist plans, is set to be Trump's ambassador to Israel. The second Trump administration is expected to give Netanyahu a free hand to expand settlements in the West Bank and intensify the genocide in Gaza. As Huckabee put it in 2017, quote, "There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement, their communities, their neighborhoods, their cities. There's no such thing as an occupation," end quote. Israel continued its bombardment of Gaza Wednesday, where 26 people were reported killed and a series of strikes throughout the day. One targeted the Almawasi district in the southwest, an ostensible safe zone where many displaced people are sheltering. Another strike on the Maghazi refugee camp killed five. The UN's World Food Program noted on X that markets across the enclave are in decay, adding that basic staples barely exist. It stated, quote, fresh foods, eggs, and meat barely exist, and the prices of any food available have reached record highs, unquote. The UN's Aid Coordination Office, OCHA, added that all attempts to gain Israeli approval for the delivery of supplies to northern Gaza since the beginning of November have been rebuffed. In early October, Netanyahu's far-right regime adopted what is known as the General's Plan, which calls for the denial of all food aid to northern Gaza and the treating of all civilians who remain as enemy combatants. On Tuesday, the Biden administration defended Israel against criticism from aid organizations, pointing to the abysmally low level of deliveries entering the enclave. Even though the Zionist regime is allowing just one-tenth of the 350 aid trucks into Gaza per day called for by the Biden administration last month, the State Department asserted Tuesday that Israel was not violating international humanitarian law by withholding food aid and refused to place any restrictions on Washington's massive weapons deliveries. The UN Security Council held a briefing the same day on the threat of famine in northern Gaza. It was requested by Guyana and Switzerland following a November 8 alert from the Integrated Food Phase Classification, or IPC, stating that there is, quote, a strong likelihood that famine is imminent within areas of the northern Gaza Strip, unquote. An earlier October 17th snapshot from the agency revealed that the entirety of Gaza is at risk of famine between November and April 2025, quote, under a worst-case scenario that has a reasonable chance of occurring, unquote. Joyce Masua, interim head of the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, told Tuesday's Security Council meeting, quote, we are witnessing acts reminiscent of the gravest international crimes, unquote. She described Israel's ongoing siege of northern Gaza as, quote, an intensified, extreme, and accelerated version of the horrors of the past year. Head of the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO, Rain Paulson, told the Security Council that the number of people facing catastrophic food insecurity, the highest classification on the IPC's food insecurity scale, would treble from the current level of 133,000 in the coming months. Quote, men, women, boys, and girls are effectively starving as the conflict rages, with humanitarian organizations blocked from delivering assistance to those in need. Paulson continued, quote, by the time famine has been declared, people are already dying of hunger, with irreversible consequences that can last generations. An FAO release on the briefing noted that local food production has collapsed. Nearly 70% of croplands, which contributed up to one-third of daily consumption, have been destroyed. Over 70% of olive trees and orchards have been burned to the ground. Agricultural infrastructure has been decimated, and 95% of cattle and more than half of sheep and goat herds have died, unquote. None of these horrors move the imperialist barbarians represented in the Security Council. They are dead set and continuing with their support for Israel's genocide and vicious attacks on anyone who protested at home. The only social force capable of putting an end to this savagery is the international working class, mobilized on the basis of a socialist and internationalist program for the abolition of capitalism, the root cause of genocide and imperialist war. Philadelphia Transit Union leaders defy members' vote to strike as contract expires, by Landon Gorov and Nick Barrickman. On November 7th, union leaders from the Transit Workers Union, or TWU, Local 234, kept workers on the job as their one-year contract expired, in defiance of the will of the membership. On October 27th, members of Local 234 voted unanimously to authorize a strike against SEPTA because their one-year contract was set to expire at midnight on November 8th. TWU Local 234 President Brian Pollitt told reporters on November 7th, as negotiations ended, quote, "We're still talking," unquote. In a highly revealing comment, Pollitt said that, quote, "I'll roll my sleeves up and bang on the table and do everything I have to do to avoid a strike," unquote, preceding the decision. TWU Local 234 covers around 5,000 workers in Philadelphia who are bus drivers, transit operators, and others involved in transit work. They have been working under a one-year contract, which included a single 3% raise. This followed the previous 2021 and 2022 contract, which saw a 6% raise over 2 years. The paltry raises were swallowed by a massive spike in inflation, which has continued to the present. SEPTA had previously offered a contract with no wage increase, but according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, it, quote, "moved off that position Thursday," unquote, without explaining what its new stance was. In addition, another key concern is driver safety in response to violent crime. In justifying the low-wage offers, SEPTA has claimed poverty, noting it is running a $240 million deficit. Like transit systems throughout the United States and globally that have suffered massive declines in ridership in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, the service has used up the last of its federal pandemic funds and is now seeking deep budget cuts. A one-time infusion of $161 million to SEPTA was shot down earlier in the year by the Pennsylvania State Senate. This led to SEPTA increasing their fare prices by 30%. The Senate claimed that the money had to be used to build bridges and repair infrastructure, but were more than willing to increase the state police's budget by $200 million compared to last year. Workers at the fifth largest transit system in the United States have been left totally in the dark about what is currently happening with their contract negotiations. According to the rules of Local 234, even if members vote to authorize a strike, the president of a local has the final say in the strike authorization. Pollitt also told reporters on October 27th that, quote, "It feels great that I have the right to pull the plug, and make no mistake, I don't want to. I want to continue to bargain fairly in hopes that we can reach a good deal, but if I have to call a strike, I will," unquote. Prior to overturning the member strike vote, media reports suggested Local 234 and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, District Council 33, which covers 9,000 blue-collar workers, could hold a joint strike after District Council 33 workers voted to strike due to its contract expiring back in June this year. On Wednesday, ABC News reported that the municipal workers had completed a strike authorization vote and would, quote, give a 10-day warning about a potential strike, raising the potential of a complete halt to many essential city operations. The TWU's effort to shut down the member strike comes just days after the 2024 U.S. presidential elections, which saw the fascist Republican Donald Trump win against Democrat Kamala Harris. In the aftermath of the election, in which Trump has threatened dictatorship and mass deportation, the Democratic Party has turned all of its efforts toward ensuring a transfer of power to the incoming president. It has worked in a close partnership with the trade union bureaucracy to suppress eruptions of the class struggle in order to keep workers tied to their corporate and war agenda. The decision to block the strike by the union bureaucracy demonstrates the fear of the ruling class of a rebellion from below breaking out. SEPTA workers must break the stranglehold imposed upon them by their local leadership in order to carry out an effective struggle for their living standards. As has already been revealed, no trust can be given to the local bureaucrats who will override their votes on any issue. Workers must form independent rank-and-file committees which will allow them to expand their struggle to other sections of workers in both SEPTA and throughout the region. A particular appeal must be to the municipal workers to join them for a joint strike. Likewise, while TWU and SEPTA leaders appeal to the state Democrats in Harrisburg for funds, a demand to defend the jobs of cabinet workers in nearby Thompsonville, who are threatened with layoffs as the country's largest private cabinet manufacturer plans to cut jobs. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.